This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's absolutely fantastic to have you here. We're going to keep this brief today because Ben has already told me to keep the intro short, Sharon. So I will do exactly that, producer Ben. I don't like doing things briefly, but I'll give it a good go. My name's Sharon Hartley. You can call me Shaz, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England, 4.5 years plus alcohol free. Didn't want to do it, thought it'd be boring, fell in love with sobriety, and here we are 4.5 years later. There you go. Ben, is that short enough for you?
Yep, brilliant. Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 34, I live in Liverpool, commit to 3 years alcohol free. And John Waite is our guest today. That's why we've got to be short. Shaz, go for the big intro quick. Come on.
Let's crack on fast. Come on. John Waite joins us on the podcast today. Presenter, TV chef, author, dancer, baker, all-round fabulous AF person, and in his own words, terminal gobshite. Welcome. Welcome to Over the Influence.
You guys, do you know what? I'm so happy to be chatting to you because your podcast is one of the most important things that has helped me on my sobriety journey, listening to this every week and just remembering that there are people out there who are also struggling with the same thing. You know, it brings that sense of community right into my mobile phone, into my ears. And thank you so much for doing what you do. It's bloody helpful.
You know what? That just makes our hearts sing. It's why we do it, John, honestly. Because like you, you know, I've been described as a gobshite before and I'll take it. I'm not bothered because we say on this podcast, singing about sobriety, it's so important to shout for the people at the back that might not just be able to hear, that might not have a voice. And honestly, it warms our cockles that you listen to us week in, week out. I think I sent you a few messages or emails a few weeks ago and you were listening to an episode on the train and I'm like, yes, John, go on, John.
it's amazing. You know, I used to sit on the train drinking vatfuls of whiskey and gin. But now I just take on Over the Influence on the train, and it's the perfect antidote, isn't it? When you kind of feel, oh, you know, should I have a drink? You think, no, be part of the community and stay part of that community. It's brilliant. So well done, you guys.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. We should say, first of all, big up your bad self for being over 120 odd days now alcohol free. John, how are you feeling?
Can I swear?
Yeah.
I feel fucking brilliant.
Yay!
I feel fucking great too,
we
John.
Are fucking amazing.
You know, I was thinking about it just last night. Actually, I was out at the park with the dog in the pissing rain and hailstone, and I looked up at the sky and I thought, I'm happy. You know, life's not amazing. Life's not all. You know, I'm not in sequins anymore since Strictly, and you know, it's been and gone. But I'm happy. I'm really, really happy, and that's because of my sobriety, because it's given me just the chance to meet myself again and to like myself again, you know? Because booze makes you really, it makes you, I always say it makes you a bit of a vulnerable narcissist. It makes you think about yourself. It makes the outside become the inside. And not for everyone, you know, I don't want to demonize those who don't have a problem with booze. But for me, it made me a vulnerable narcissist. And I'm so glad that I've kicked it to the gutter because it was just, my life was crap with booze. I just didn't know when to stop drinking, basically. And it impacted every single part of my life.
The vulnerable narcissist, that's the first time I've heard it described like that. And that's really interesting because I know it feels like that's a kind of conflicting thing, well, vulnerable narcissist?
Vulnerable narcissism is, it's a technical, it's a psychiatry term, so it's a proper term, and it just relates to those who kind of focus too much on themselves, but from a victim mentality. So they compare themselves to other people all the time, like, oh, why are they getting ahead in life and I'm not? So, and that's what Boost did to me. It made me feel like I was comparing and despairing all the time. Whereas now I look at myself with self-esteem and with great pride, and I think, bloody hell, I'm 34 and I've achieved more things than most people in life would ever achieve. And I'm so proud of myself for that. I'm very grateful for the opportunities I've had, but I'm proud of the effort that I've put in. And I can say that now because it's not obnoxious or you know, obtuse to say that. It's honest and it's kind to myself, isn't it, to say that?
So, John, we mentioned at the beginning of our chat, you're over 120 days alcohol-free. I just want to get in here as well that John received an OTI. Well, it's not a crappy postcard, is it, John? It's actually a telegram.
No, it's a telegram. It was beautiful. Yeah. I got back after a hard day at work and I was like, oh, what's this? And it said private and confidential. I thought, oh, I hope. Have I got the clap or something like that? What's going on? And it turned out to be a telegram. And I've thank you so much. It was really, really lovely to receive that. Because,
oh, you're more than welcome.
It's a pat on the back, isn't it? It's a nice pat on the back for putting in the hard work.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. It's not easy, this AF lark, this J word that we talk about a lot, this journey, this booze-free adventure. John, can we rewind to before you made the decision to remove booze and just sort of talk about how bad it got, if indeed it did get really bad? And was there a point where you went, you know what, I'm going to change this now?
Well, for me, I don't think I ever hit rock bottom, because, you know, you talk about rock bottom a lot on the show, but I was definitely hurtling down the cliff and banging my head on the cliff many, many times. I was plummeting towards rock bottom. And there were times in the past, over the past maybe 8 years, where I've really wanted to give up booze, because it just made me, I couldn't stop drinking. You know, if I picked up a drink, if I had one beer, for the most part, that would be me then for the night, until I either passed out drunk or stayed out in Manchester until the first train home and then regretted everything. You know, I was just overindulging. I was spending too much money. And as a result of being exhausted, being emotionally unstable, because booze, let's face it, it affects your dopamine levels, doesn't it? It affects your brain on a neurochemical level. As a result of that, I was just making very rash decisions in life, in my relationship, in my professional life, with my family. And I just found myself, I felt like I was floating away from myself. Like I knew who I wanted to be. I could feel the man that I wanted to be, but he kept slipping through my fingers. Every time I had him in my grasp, he was slipping through my fingers. And I kept just spiraling to a pit of shame, and then the vulnerable kind of, you know, low self-esteem and inward selfish thinking. And I realised that there was only one thing between me and him, the man I wanted to be, and that was the excesses of booze, you know. For example, on Christmas Day, I woke up, Christmas just gone, I woke up on the floor here in my bedroom that I'm in now, absolutely freezing cold with a blanket over me and a bowl of vomit next to me. And I'd been out for an afternoon, a Christmas Eve party at my friend's house. I said I was going to have one glass, and I got to, you know, being sick on the floor. My boyfriend tried to take me home after the party, but I insisted on going to the pub where he left me because he had to feed the dog and sort our life out, responsibility. And I was there propping the bar up with bottles of, with glasses of Sambuca around me, empty glasses of Sambuca rocking on my stool. And he just dragged me back to the house. And I woke up the next day, Christmas Day, and I didn't want my dad to come round, which is a really sad thing, you know, because I'd organised a lovely brunch for my dad. He did come around in the end, but I didn't want him to. And then I went to mum's house for Christmas dinner, and there was a small hiccup in the kind of logistics of the kitchen, as you'd expect on Christmas Day. And had I not been hungover, and had I not been completely emotionally unstable, I could have dealt with it like the man I wanted to be. But instead, I ended up standing there, you know, groomed and perfect in this beautiful sleeping bomber jacket, being a complete and utter ugly, the ugliest person I could possibly be. You know, that juxtaposition of my life really said it all for me. I was there in a beautiful outfit with my hair perfectly groomed, and I was being horrible to my own mother. And I thought to myself, you've got to change. You have to change, because I couldn't keep doing that. My mum wanted me to go home on Christmas Day. You know, she was like, just go, just take your dog and go home. And I thought to myself, I'm ruining everything here. I'm ruining the work that I'm putting in, the relationships with the people that I've really carefully nurtured over the years. And when your own mother, who loves you unconditionally, you know, says to you, go home on Christmas Day, that is pretty much when the shit hits the fan, isn't it? And so that was the turning point for me. I realised that I had to make a change and alcohol was it.
Did you think about moderation, John? Or was it just, right, this needs to go completely?
I don't know what moderation is in life, Ben, because I am an addict. You know, I'm an addict. I can't stop drinking when I didn't need to drink every day, you know, and I'm not going to say how much I drink because I don't think comparison is helpful, because people might look at me and say, oh, I'm not drinking anywhere near enough as much as that, so I don't have a problem. If you think you've got a problem, you deal with it. But I don't have an off switch. I don't have an off switch for most things. You know, I have an eating disorder as well. I have a binge eating disorder, but I'm bulimic. And that is an addiction for me. It's part of it is an addiction to food. It's much deeper than that, but it's that addictive personality for me is about control. And do you know what? Since going sober, and I'm sure we'll develop this much further down the line in the conversation, but since going sober, I have much more control over my bulimia, much more control over spontaneous spending, because I realize now that I was trying to fill a void with alcohol, and not just alcohol. My addictive personality is trying to fill a void, an emotional void, with physical, tangible things. And for the most part, that is a very dangerous thing to do. But my sobriety has made me see that, and I can deal with it now.
You speak so honestly. And it takes real, excuse this term, but I like it. It just takes real balls to turn round and go, actually, that's what was wrong with me. This is where I failed. This is where I let people down. And alcohol, when you remove it, it strips everything back, doesn't it? And you're just sitting here now speaking to us so honestly and so calmly. You just seem really calm, John, and together.
I am calm because I'm at peace with it. You know, I don't feel an ounce of shame about it, you know, because that vitriolic little shit who was shouting at his mum on Christmas Day, it was me, but it was a version of me that is not really who I am at the core. It was like a branch of who I was at the time. And I can forgive myself for letting myself get to that stage. I'll never forgive that version of myself for saying those horrible things, but I can forgive myself for letting myself get to that stage. And because my mum forgives me, she understands, you know, we speak honestly and openly about it, because I think that's the only medicine, isn't it, really? When it comes to something like this, you have to be honest and you have to be shameless about it. And I just think the more that we talk calmly, there's not enough calm conversation anymore. In the world that we live in, where cancel culture is just lurking around the corner, every single corner, people often speak out of fear. But I just feel like I have to speak out of honesty. You know, honesty drives conversation, it drives debate sometimes, and with that hopefully comes justice, peace, all the positive elements of humanity and civilization. We're getting a bit deep, aren't we?
Honestly, you're just making me feel all calm listening to you.
I was about to say
you,
exactly the same thing. Yeah, I'm like, you know, I can feel myself kind of getting deeper into my chair.
Yeah, same. He's
well, don't
stroking
fall asleep.
His chin.
No. I'm back. I've got my green tea. John, I mean, you say your mum's forgiven you and that you can be very honest. Like, in terms of relationships then, sounds like you may have verged on doing damage, but it, you know, is it kind of all those relationships started to repair themselves, and are the important people in your life openly behind you with this?
New
sobriety.
I wouldn't have been able to achieve this without those people. You know, you can achieve it on your own, but it's very, very difficult. But ultimately, it has to be a solo decision and a solo adventure and a solo journey. But there are cheerleaders, aren't there, along the way? And I always find, and the people who wanted me to improve my lifestyle and wanted me to stop drinking, they're the ones who I now have a much stronger and more powerful relationship with. The people who I was defaulting to at a weekend and spending 12 hours in a nightclub with, thinking, I love these people. I've not heard a peep from the fuckers, you know.
Kel surprise.
There's a difference between friends and drinking buddies, isn't there? And drinking buddies, it sounds lovely and joyful and jolly and you know, have a good old knees up. But actually, they're part of the problem. They're part of the problem. And the real friends are the ones who text you and say, were you up all night last night? I'm worried about you. You know, they're the ones who will confront the situation. And they're the ones who will say to you, like my mum, get out of my house on Christmas Day. You know, the ones who will set those firm boundaries in place. Because that's what love is, isn't it? Love is discipline and boundaries as well as having a good laugh. It's also respect and responsibility.
Of course it is. And I love the fact that you talked there about your cheerleading team. A lot of people we speak to, and I always say, every credit if you can do this on your own. You know, they manage without a community, without other sober people. Bloody hell, it's tough. It's really, really tough because, you know, we always say if giving up booze was easy, there'd be a damn sight more people doing it and you wouldn't be so, you know, stigmatised for being sober and boring. I love the fact you've got a cheerleading team. Can we talk about Victoria, your sister?
Yeah,
now, I know
to,
she's
yeah.
not here, which is a shame, and we'll hopefully get you both on the podcast another time. But I know she's so very, very important, isn't she, in your life and on this journey.
She is completely. She's my hero, Victoria. What she's done to turn her life around is remarkable. You know, she was beyond rock bottom. You know, she was 12 feet under rock bottom, and there were times when I would think and say to my family, and I feel, you know, not ashamed of this, but this is how bad it was. There were times when I would say, she'd be better off dead. That's how bad it got for Victoria. She'd be better off dead. Me as her own brother, her little brother, thinking that. Because we were all helpless. We didn't know what to do. But something clicked in her. She said she woke up one day after being, you know, in different rehabs and hospitals. And she woke up one day and it wasn't about her children. It wasn't about her family. It was about her. She said, I don't deserve this life. And it's so powerful to think that because, you know, there's only so much you can do for other people. You know, of course, we have to bear other people in mind and the responsibility that we have. But a huge part of helping other people is by respecting yourself and having the self-respect and self-possessiveness to say, I have to be better for me, that I can be a better person for them. And that's what she did. And she did it, you know, she did it herself. Speaking of doing it alone, she did it herself. She relapsed, she bounced back, she went on a real up and down journey. And she kicked and screamed. She was being dragged down by the devil and she was kicking and screaming. She fought with everything she had. And I think seeing her transform her life has really inspired me. And I don't think I would have been able to be as strong as I've been if it weren't for Arvik. So she's my hero. She's my biggest inspiration.
We're just going to take a really quick break from this, quite frankly, fabulous chat with the one and only John Waite, star of Strictly, master baker, TV chef, author, all-round, fabulous alcohol-free person. You know what I really like, Ben, is that on that list, he's an OTI listener as well, which is really, really good. And he got in touch to
it's
say,
mad, isn't it?
Really like the pod. And we really like you, John Waite, a lot.
Mm. You know what I really don't like? Sarah Hartley.
What?
Heights. So why have I been the one who signed up to do this bloody hiking and rock climbing in the Peak District?
Well, now you mention it, alcohol-free life, it's all about new challenges, isn't it? And doing things that scare you and doing things that are different. And what better way to face those fears, Ben, than taking the lead on our next OTI outdoor adventure of the 2023 season. Bit of hiking, followed by bit of rock climbing. I can't come, so you're going to have to deal with it.
I love the Peak District. I love hiking. I'm not a big fan of rock climbing, but I'm going to give it a go because you're right. You know, you should push yourself out of your comfort zone.
And you know what? Joking apart, literally just before I was answering some messages in the forum, and somebody's got in touch and they've said, really quite fancy it, like you, enjoy the outdoors, beautiful part of the world, really like hiking, not keen on heights. And I'm like, well, you can go along and do the hike. And when it comes to the rock climbing bit, maybe give it a go. And if it's absolutely not for you, you do not have to do anything, do you? You don't have to do it, Ben. Joking apart. But you'll be in very safe hands with our outdoor leaders.
Is it Tony's leading this one?
It's lovely Tony.
Isn't Tony ex-military?
Is he now?
I think he is.
He'll put you through your paces.
He looks ex-military anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah, I hope he's listening.
Yeah. I know that we're in safe hands. And actually, what I like about this as an event, we're going to be hiking out into the middle of nowhere and then climbing a rock in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
I really like that. You know, it's not like a climbing wall.
No, it's not.
It's
not like...
screaming kids.
Yeah. No,
I'm stuck.
It's not a climbing wall. And you're not sort of driving to the base of a massive rock face and going, right, climb that. It's just part of the...
Surrounded by loads of other people. Like, it's just going to be us, isn't it? We're going to be walking out into the countryside, just us.
Doing your thing.
Climbing some rocks. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be good. And I can't wait to see the photographs of you in your hard hat and wearing those really uncomfortable harnesses that sort of really dig in around the crotch.
Really kind of, they dig in and they really make the, you know, the kind of like... I'm gesturing.
Why are you doing
that? Zoom here.
Why are you doing that with your hands, like making a V?
Because it kind of like really accentuates one particular area.
It does. It's the worst,
doesn't it? Yeah. We should probably state again at this point. This is not us with a load of ropes turning up, going, "I'll go on. Fling yourself off there, be fine." It's fully insured, fully qualified instructors with us for this. If you want something that does push you out of your comfort zone, and if you want to kind of kickstart your summer off by going, right, you know what? It's good to feel the fear occasionally. Not too often, but occasionally.
Yeah, not all the time.
That's how I'm talking myself into this. Can you tell?
I can tell, very much so. And I am sorry that I can't be there for this one. However, you know, I've physically put the work in on the last one, England's highest mountain, Ben.
Yeah. And people were buzzing after that, weren't they?
Oh. I mean, you know, let's not beat around the bush or beat around the mountain. It was a tough slog, probably. So we've got Ben Nevis later this year as well, but having done Ben Nevis already, I think Scarfell, England's highest mountain, it's a tougher slog. It's just so flipping steep and it's quite scrambly. But again, we were guided. We had three leaders. It was excellent. And for anybody that turned up and felt a little bit, oh, crikey, what am I doing? You know, fast forward 8 hours and driving home and people get in touch after the event. Yeah, it was just phenomenal. Really, really good.
Because it's not just about the event itself. You know, it's about all the conversation that you have throughout the day. And of course, there'll be loads of opportunity for that in the Peak District. When is it, Shaz? What's the date for this one?
So this one is taking place on Saturday, the 20th of May. We have got our start location confirmed. The event starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. So actually, you've got quite a lie in for this one. It's not too bad. Beautiful part of the world. And I think it'll end sort of mid to late afternoon. And again, it's just a bunch of like-minded people. None of the awkward, oh, just have one. If you want to talk about alcohol-free journeys, fantastic. But the chances are you won't really have time. And there's a load of other stuff to talk about as well. The last event we did was brilliant. I'm still buzzing from it now. And so are our community members. It was fantastic. But if you fancy getting involved in our next OTI outdoor adventure, drop me an email. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. I mean, just for the fact alone that you are going to see Ben in a hard hat and a harness swinging from a rock is it's worth it just for that reason, really.
If you want to come and see me actually scream like a child. I'm so scared.
But
I can't even turn to Shaz to hold me.
I can't hold you. I can't be there. I can do it virtually. I can send you some messages of support. I won't be there because I'm busy studying that weekend. I'll have my head in some books.
Can we just say what happens in the Peak District stays in the Peak District? Like if I do anything really embarrassing because I'm scared, we won't tell anyone else, okay?
What do you mean just if be you between actually us. Shut yourself?
No, Sharon, right, let's get back to this episode with John Way. That's disgusting. No, I wasn't talking about that at all.
Have an absolute ball. And if you're interested, OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Sorry about that. Let's get back to this fabulous chat with the one and only John Waite.
John, you are very famous. And you've been on shows that span generations. Like, I've got downstairs now two people who are incredibly excited to hear how this conversation's gone. 10-year-old Millie and 40-year-old Jem. You know, they are definitely, they can't believe that I am speaking to you right now. Is that, you know, being very well known, is that come into your thinking at all when you've been thinking about, like, maybe coming on this podcast, for example, and talking about sobriety? Speaking of vulnerability earlier, this is really being very vulnerable.
It is. And I mean, I pride myself on my vulnerability. I pride myself on being consciously vulnerable, because I think, and you guys will all know this, all our listeners on the podcast will know this, because they will too have been through this very thing. The moment you accept that your boundaries and your limits aren't weaknesses, but they're strengths, that's when you know that it's okay to be vulnerable. You know, it's okay to be, sometimes have cracks in the surface. We're human. And I find that I don't like bullshit, basically. I really can't stand the bullshit. And in this career, especially, that I'm in, there's a lot of bullshit. You know, it's show business. It's all spectacle. It's all illusion. And it's beautiful. And there's some really talented, amazing people within it. But, you know, it's illusory. And that sometimes gets to me. I think, oh, it's all a bit much to cope with. And the only thing that I can control is my truth and my reality by being consciously vulnerable. And hopefully, you know, I inspire people with things that I write in my cookery books. You know, I get lots of lovely pictures and messages from people who've done my recipes, some better than others, I'll add. But what I find the most is when people make little changes on a personal level because of something I've spoken about, you know, and I'm sure you guys will have experienced that too. It's not about, it's just about community again, isn't it? I think when you grow up kind of like not quite knowing who you are, which I did, you know, because as a young gay lad in the late 90s, it was all very, there was a lot of oppression around, you know, any gay kisses on television were scandalous, they weren't celebrated, and you know, you grow up kind of blinkered, don't you? Deciding on where to go and what to dress and how to even hold your voice, what tone of voice to speak in. So when you grow up through that kind of great uncertainty about who you are, there comes a point when you just think, I've had enough of this, fuck it, I'm going to be who I'm meant to be. And the only way that you can achieve that is by wearing the clothes you want to wear, presenting yourself the way you want to present, warts and all. And I think that's why I hate bullshit so much, because I grew up presenting my life as you know, it was bullshit, it was a presentation to keep myself safe, whereas now I don't care what people think. This is who I am. I'm vulnerable, I'm a flawed, messed up human being, and it's beautiful.
You said earlier going alcohol free has given you the chance to meet yourself again and like yourself again. Like, what are the things that you've refound that you kind of may have forgotten about?
So I've refound that I can be daft and funny without being hungover, because I always used to say to my partner, said to me earlier today, you've never done a food show without either being drunk or hungover. And I don't mean television show, I mean food, you know, food, live food demonstration. And that's because I always thought when you're hungover, everything's hilarious, isn't it? So I thought I was being a really good, funny presenter, but actually I was just being an idiot, a daft idiot, probably saying really inappropriate things. So I've relearned that I can be daft and I can be funny, but in a more responsible way. And I've also relearned the fact that the negative aspects of my personality as well, you know, sometimes I get a bit, if something goes wrong at work, I get a bit paranoid and I start to internalize it and think, oh, it's my fault. Or about this fear of abandonment kicks in, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get fired. But I'm able now to acknowledge that and say, oh, get out of here, you black dog. None of that today. And it gives you the, not the strength, because that implies the opposite is weakness, and it's not. It gives you the self-awareness to say, this is what's happening. I'm going to give it a listen. It's, you know, something's happening internally. It's valid, but I am in control of this emotion. And I think the best way of summarizing it in a very, you know, in a neat, tidy soundbite for you is, my thoughts aren't fact. And that's the most powerful mantra, I think, is my thoughts aren't fact. And it's not about gaslighting yourself, you know, because people might think, oh, why are you gaslighting yourself? But it's not. It's about being an adult. It's about being responsible and saying, right, I've got something here. It might be triggered from a childhood emotion. It might be a reasonable response for where I am now. Let's analyze it. Let's sit with it. And then we'll act. Don't just react. analyse it, and then act accordingly. And that's what it's given me the power to do. Yeah, my thoughts on facts. And that was from my a psychotherapist I was seeing for my bulimia a few years ago, Dr. Amara Nassim. She's an amazing human being and so lovely. And that mantra has been true in every facet of my life now, not just my sobriety, but my ongoing battle with bulimia and other, you know, depressive episodes that we all get as human beings.
John, do you mind if we talk a little bit more about that and about, as you said there, your ongoing battle with bulimia and how removing alcohol has maybe helped you cope with it a bit more, deal with it better? I've had no experience of eating disorders myself, so I want to understand further and find out how removing alcohol can help with that aspect of your life. It's we had a guest on the podcast, a young woman from, she's from New Zealand, wasn't she, Ben? I think originally from this country, based in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And again, she talked about the link between alcohol and eating disorders, and a lot of people got in touch after that. And I think it'd be just really interesting, if you don't mind, just to talk about it a little bit further.
Yeah, of course. So for me, I think my eating disorder, my bulimia is an emotional response to, you know, being in all horrible situations or just awkward situations that I don't have the mental vocabulary to deal with because of my upbringing. Not my upbringing, because that implies a bad upbringing. I had a bloody brilliant upbringing. But because I've grown up, you know, in the circumstances that I did. And I think...
Do you mean environment? The society that we were...
Society, yeah. Not my upbringing. Yeah. My upbringing was, you know, it was decent. But the environment. The environment in which I grew up, basically. So, yeah, I think that my bulimia has been affected by my sobriety in the sense that I'm now able to sit with emotions because, you know, whenever I get a craving for a drink, which is now much, much less often, you know, it's amazing how I don't even think about alcohol now. But if those cravings do come and you think, oh, I wish I could have had a drink tonight, you then think, well, what would happen if I had that drink? It would turn into two drinks, to a bottle, an all-nighter in Manchester, days, if not weeks, of feeling like I'd failed. Who knows what would happen in those nightclubs? Who knows what conversations I would have with people? Who knows how hurtful I could get to the ones that I love the most? So it allows you to sit with emotions and deal with it. So if I now have a triggering moment where I feel like I need to eat, sometimes that compulsion, it kicks in, and I still, you know, I'm not completely bulimia-free because I never, it's part of who I am. But sometimes I'm now able to say, think to myself, like, well, if I have this cake, I know that it won't be just this one cake. I know for a fact that I'm already in a bulimic binge before I've started eating. So I have to distract myself and take myself out of that situation. And I think there's no thinking about it, being sober gives you the headspace to deal with that kind of thing. It gives you the power to deal with that kind of thing. You know, and when you drink, on a neurochemical level, your dopamine is so imbalanced, isn't it, that when it goes high from alcohol or from the buzz of alcohol, it has to then be balanced by the negative, which takes it out of balance and it becomes too negative. And as a result, you're going through life with this great big seesaw in your head, the seesaw of emotion. And so you're going to find other things to fill it with. It's not just the booze that becomes the kind of toolkit to deal with the imbalance of life. It kind of becomes a much bigger problem, you know. And I found that getting my seesaw in my head much more steady, that's affected everything I do. Even the conversations I have with my boyfriend, like before I gave up alcohol, and we had this, he told me this yesterday, we spoke about this yesterday, he said, before you gave up alcohol, if I wanted to talk to you about something and you couldn't emotionally deal with it, you'd just say, oh, can we talk about this another time? Whereas I haven't said that once to him. I've been there for him. I've been able to say, yeah, what's up? What can we talk about? Even if it's something as dull as, what towel shall we get for the bathroom, you know, if we're in being, you know, from the very dull to the very important and deep, I can be there for him because I have the emotional headspace to be there for him.
John, really important question now. What towels would you have in the bathroom from being?
Oh, don't start. I don't know.
Come on.
I think there's definitely Egyptian cotton in there, isn't there, John?
Well, I like it.
You're on Strictly.
I like an itchy dry towel.
You know, I like an itchy dry, yeah.
The best if they've been left outside, aren't they?
Yeah, off the washing line.
Off the washing line.
It's like scouring your skin.
It must be a northern thing, that.
I don't like soft cotton. No.
No, I don't.
I like a soft cotton bed sheet. The kind of bed sheet where if you get in and you're wearing silk pyjamas, you'd slip right out again.
No, that's the worst. I like a flannelette. A nice flannelette sheet. Oh, yeah.
Do you not wake up all torn and tattered from the... We're digressing, aren't we?
We are digressing, and that's what this podcast is all about.
Do you know what, as well, when you go sober and you realise the impact booze had on your life and how much healthier you feel, you start to become much more aware of the other things that are impacting your life. So like coffee. I've given up caffeine.
How?
Completely.
How?
Oh. It made us feel a bit on edge when you said that before we started recording, John. You can see both me and Shaz kind of recoiled.
Not comfortable with this.
The reason I gave it up is because caffeine is, you know, it increases your cortisol levels. And it puts your body into a permanent state of stress if you drink it. I was drinking, you know, 4 or 5 cups a day. So your body is permanently stressed, and that affects your diet. It affects your blood sugar as well. And I noticed the difference in my well-being from caffeine. I thought, I'm a bit erratic here. So I've given caffeine up, and now I feel like a Buddhist monk on a hill.
Do you though? Do you really? How did you do it, and how bad did it get? Because I can't do an hour. In the morning, I just can't.
Can you not?
No.
I white knuckled it, Shaz. I had to just bear with it. And physically, it was worse than giving up alcohol. You know, the withdrawal symptoms were absolutely horrific. Like, low mood, the headaches. I've never had a headache like it, apart from a migraine back in 1972. But the headaches were awful. And, you know, it's just that low energy, low mood. But I knew that there'd be a light at the end of the tunnel because I've been through something similar before with booze. I just knew just to hang in there. I have the strength. I can do bloody hard things. And I feel much better for it. I feel more energised, consistent. I don't get the afternoon slump now. I just feel much, much more level.
I'm so impressed.
The thing is, Shaz, you can do it. If you wanted to, you could do it.
Well, maybe that's the key then,
isn't
it?
You were a daily drinker.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like you were, and bearing in mind, you know, alcohol for you, yes, I know that we don't talk about the kind of quantities necessarily, but you were drinking it every single day.
Yeah.
And you just stopped.
Every day, yeah.
Of course you can give up coffee if you want to. I mean, the thing is, you've got to want to. John, you're talking there, and I'm 2 weeks now, well, 2 weeks tomorrow, nicotine-free. I've finally given up the stupid bloody vape. And everything that you're describing, the headaches, the low mood, yeah. I'm calling it low mood. Shaz, your phrase was bear with a slapped ass. Was it?
It was a bear with a sore ass, and you look like a bear with a sore ass. Slapped face. Or was it a slapped ass?
Yeah.
Either way, you were pretty grumpy.
Yeah, and I'm still there, to be honest. I've still got 1 week until 99% of the nicotine is then out of my system.
And you know what?
3 weeks is the kind of...
You're going to feel amazing. This is the thing, these things, and I don't want to be evangelical and all, you know, all self-righteous about these things, but these are drugs. These are mind-altering drugs. They alter your body, and they're so socially encouraged. Not even encouraged, they're enforced, aren't they, by society, these things. And your body doesn't need them. Your body does not need them. You've been led to believe that your body needs them. And I never thought I'd become one of these preachy pricks. But I'm proud to be. I'm a preachy prick and proud.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. A proud and literate proud preachy prick.
Exactly.
As well, which I really like. It's funny, isn't it, the coffee thing, because it actually, what are the differences really? You know, it's this, I learned about coffee that I thought that coffee woke you up, but it doesn't. It just blocks the receptors in your brain that make you think that you're tired.
Yeah.
So it's not actually giving you energy. It's
adrenaline.
You from realising that you haven't got it. Yeah.
Get that.
I've got to do that next,
that,
John. You're inspiring me, actually.
Coffee doesn't turn me into an odious drunken dick, does it?
No,
well,
but
be careful how you answer this,
totally,
Ben.
I totally get what John was saying after you've just been insulting me about, you know, it does raise the stress levels. Like the other day, I had a particularly strong coffee by accident, and it really made me feel on edge and jittery.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, I probably was being a bit more of an ass than I usually am. So, you know, but there are kind of, I can totally see the similarities between it. It's a substance that we drink that alters our mood that we don't need naturally.
And also...
Get the nicotine out, then the coffee, John. I'll do the coffee next.
No, but when you have a spike in cortisol, you know, your stress hormone, your body has to release more insulin because cortisol affects your blood sugar. So it actually impacts all your hormone. It's a hormonal imbalance as well. And yeah, I just feel Brilliant.
Into alcohol-free life. Brilliant.
It's amazing because, you know, you do think, and I was listening to the Unmumsy Mum one just this morning.
Wasn't it good?
Oh, she's amazing. And she was saying, like, she doesn't feel, slightly laments the fact that, you know, that part of her life is over, but it's not her anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, you move on. And I think that's brilliant because, to be honest with you, I'm lucky in that, the sense that a lot of my friends that I've been friends with since way before Bake Off, for over 10 years, they're all young mums and dads now, and they don't drink as much. So whenever they came round, they were probably dreading coming round to a party because I'd be like force feeding them tequila. Whereas now we can go for lovely walks and stuff. So luckily, my friendship group isn't based in alcohol. It's based in much more righteous and wholesome things. Whereas some people struggle because, you know, a lot of their community is based on going out and getting pissed, because it gives that false illusion of closeness and proximity in a relationship, doesn't it? But there's nothing, and the people who call me boring now, or the people who don't get in touch, they're the ones who are boring, because there's nothing more boring than someone going, oh, I love you so much, darling, I'm gonna change each other's lives. They're like, fuck off, you know, get out of my face, get to bed.
Do people actually say that to you, though? You know, John Waite, that's been on Bake Off, Strictly, telly, doing all this stuff, and you've decided to remove one thing. Oh, you're well boring, you. I mean, I don't think you could be any less boring if you tried.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Alcohol makes people numb. It makes people numb to what is actually quite an exciting life. But what I've also found is that it's helped me enforce boundaries as well. Like, I was in London a couple of weeks ago, doing something or other. You don't need to know what it was. And a lady came up.
A secret TV project?
No, God, no. It's just for my book, but I didn't want to promote it.
We can do that at the end. No, of course
you,
we will.
You did it.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Well, we will.
I don't like doing that because...
Well, you might not, but we would like to do that.
Okay. But I was in a hotel restaurant getting some food, and a lady came up to me and she was a bit pissed, and she was like, oh, I know you, you're famous. And I was just like, can you give me a minute? I'm a bit tired, I'm a bit stressed, and I don't need this right now. And I wasn't rude to her, but it just allows you to say, this is a boundary. And, you know, she didn't even know my name. It wasn't like she was a big fan. She just wanted to say hello to someone she'd seen on television. And I thought, you know what, not tonight, love. I'm having a nice night with my boyfriend. We've been busy today. Now bugger off.
That's fair enough, yeah. Isn't it?
John, earlier on, I'm going to have to put this on my quotes board, because you said that you felt like you were floating away from yourself.
Yeah.
I love that as a phrase. And I think that so many people have that same feeling, that kind of, it's that intuition, isn't it? It's that little voice in their head that actually their relationship with alcohol, is it going the right way? You know, you got to the point where you weren't kind of slipping down the cliff. You were hurtling down the cliff.
Yeah.
Is the word that
banging
you
his head on the way as well, earlier. He said.
What would you, like, in terms of kind of the fear around removing alcohol, that's the thing I think that stops a lot of people from giving it a go in the first place.
Yeah.
What would you say to somebody who's listening to this and isn't alcohol free? You know, they are sober curious. They're listening to this podcast because they've got that little voice, that kind of intuition is there. What would you say to them? Because by saying this, we are young men.
Have you heard him?
what would you say to somebody who hasn't quite, they know that they want to do it, they're a bit scared of it, They haven't got a date in mind that they're aiming for. They're just kind of listening to this podcast because they're letting it kind of sink in. If this is the moment,
yeah,
what would you say to them to go, right, come on, let's give this a go?
I'd probably say you'll gain far more than you'll lose. You'll gain life. You'll gain friendship, deep-rooted connections with people, and you'll gain a sense of self that you've never had.
Do you really truly believe that, or are you just saying it because you've removed alcohol?
No, I believe it truly. I truly believe it. Like, you get your gain. What is there to lose? I'm not waking up in my car with half a kebab at my feet. I didn't drink drive, by the way, but I did sleep in my car after a night out one night with chili sauce down my front and a bottle of poppers in my hand. You know, you don't say hurtful things to people. when you're sober. You analyse things before you speak. You save money. You look better. You're healthier. I've lost a bit of weight. My eyes are clearer. My skin's clearer. Like, what have I got to... What have I lost? What have I lost in all of this? Nothing. I've not lost a bloody thing. Apart from shame. And that's worth losing, isn't it?
We could talk and talk and talk all night.
I know.
I knew when we... I think we connected over Insta. And then I sent you an email. And I'm like, I don't know what it is. There's something about connecting with the people that get it, and you have this instant friendship, and that's how it feels now. You know, regardless of the fact, like Ben said before, you're well famous, you are. It's like, I just feel like we've known you for ages and ages. Thank you so much for your honesty. You've shared such personal things and you've been so incredibly honest. We must catch up again in a few months' time. It would be brilliant. And hopefully as well with your sister Vic, if we can squeeze that in. John, before you go, please do give your book a plug, your next project.
Well, it's actually it's linked to this because it's my memoir. So it talks all about my sobriety journey at the end, because I didn't know I was going to be sober when I started writing my memoir. I started writing it when I was still, you know, drinking. And it's called Dancing on Eggshells.
Yeah. Great title.
I mean, could that be any better?
I love that. Dancing on Eggshells, awesome. That's great. Love it.
But halfway through writing it, I was like, I'm going to have to add a chapter now because I'm newly sober and I'm not going back. So there's a whole chapter now about my sobriety, which I'm really excited to share. And it, you know, I just think, and again, thank you guys so much for doing what you do, because again, you're part of the cheerleading team that I referred to before. You guys are part of that. To have, you know, books and podcasts to listen to, it makes that journey of doubt a little bit more easy.
John Waite, presenter, TV chef, author, dancer, baker, and as we said at the beginning of this podcast, terminal gobshite and one of the nicest gobshites we've ever met. John Waite, thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. What a lovely, lovely guy. Really, really honest, really inspiring. And I'm so glad that we've been able to connect with John Waite. And I've got a feeling that we'll be in touch with John more and more over the coming weeks and months. Crack on with your AF journey, John, because you're doing flipping amazing. You know, Ben, when you start out on your alcohol-free journey, it can be quite, what's the word, nerve-wracking. Can't it? You can feel that you're about
absolutely.
To step out of your comfort zone. In many ways, it's like climbing a mountain. Are you ever going to get to the summit? Talking of heights, Ben, Saturday, May the 20th.
I'll be up there on a rope, dangling.
Are you okay,
screaming.
If you want to come and see me climb very slowly up a rock face. But this is going to be great. It's hiking and rock climbing. If you fancy either of those things, both of those things, this is the event for you. Of course, it's all fully insured. It is with fully qualified instructors. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Tony's ex-military, you know. I'm not sure why that makes a difference, but I feel safer being in his arms.
He's just a little bit stronger, a little bit harder.
I feel safe with Tony. He does make me feel safe, to be fair. If he's the man at the end of my rope, I'll be happy.
He's lovely.
Email Sharon, OTIHQ at overtheinfluence.co.uk if you would like to come.
OTIHQ at overtheinfluence.co.uk. And also, if you do go along, just drop me an email either after the event and let me know how Ben gets on, because I cannot wait for this one. Can't wait. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. If you want any info about the community and the events we've got coming up later on in the year as well, same email address, or just take a look at the website overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you for listening. Same time next week.